Senate Education and General Government Committee. We're going to begin by opening a public hearing on House Bill 2079. We have Representative Huffman with us today and a panel including Roger Pierce, Green Deputy of Wasco County Sheriff's Office, and I believe Senator Farioli may be en route or joining us momentarily. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm John Huffman, State Representative for District 59. I appreciate your time to hear HB 2079. It had a good ride on the House side. Pardon the pun on the ride. After you see the PowerPoint presentation, you'll get that a little more. Deputy Pierce, Marine Deputy for Wasco County, as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, is going to present some compelling testimony. We're honestly here to work on saving lives. A number of lives have been lost on the Deschutes River, which runs through Maupin, and that's been one of the critical points, and that's kind of where Deputy Pierce bases out. And so I'm basically just going to finish up here. I'm teeing it up and introducing Deputy Pierce, and I, if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, would like to invite him up, and since Senator Farioli is on Farioli time today, we can maybe get started with Deputy Pierce. Thank you.
Okay. Deputy, welcome.
Thank you.
Just start off with your name and for your leader. We'll roll.
If I may, one of the other presenters today is going to run the computer for me.
Okay. Welcome. We'll dim the lights for you. And
all right. Chair Ass, committee members, thank you, first of all, for your time to let me talk a little bit about life jackets today. I really think they'll be able to hear me.
Deputy, yeah, go ahead and start out with your name.
It's a matter of being on the record. So.
I'm Deputy Roger Pierce. I work for the Wasco County Sheriff's Office based out of the Dalles, Oregon. I've been there for 21 years as a resident deputy in the south end of the county down by the Maupin area, as you heard. For most of that time, I've been the search and rescue coordinator as well as regional deputy there, and for the last 7 or 8 years, I've also been the Marine deputy for Wasco County. Okay. My object here today is to gain your support for House Bill 2079, which will make the wearing of an approved whitewater life jacket mandatory for all persons in a boat in a Class 3 or greater rapid. And we're going to be talking specifically about Class 3 rapids and about types of life jackets, so we'll show you a little bit about those. The proper life jacket is purposely left up to the Oregon State Marine Board so that further changes in advancements in technology and changes by the U.S. Coast Guard can be made by the Marine Board without returning to the legislature. And whitewater classification is universal to all rivers. It's not just a particular river here and there. Life jackets are divided into 5 different types, and I'm not going to bore you with all the statistics on all of them because there are 2 different types that we're concerned with here. Type 1s are for offshore use. 2s are the horse collar style near shore. Type 3 is what you see the most of. This is your common everyday ski jacket, boating jacket. You see this all over the place. The most common jacket there is out there. Type 4s are the throwables, either the ring or the seat cushion that you see in boats. And type 5s are a special purpose jacket. One of those special purposes is whitewater use. This whitewater jacket here has about 10 pounds more flotation in it than this ski jacket. Okay. By the way, the average human head weighs about 10 pounds. That could be an important difference. Okay. Current law requires those in guided boats to be wearing a jacket similar to this anytime they're in Class 3 and above rapids. That's an important point to remember. If you're in a guided boat, current law already says you have to have this on and properly adjusted. Okay. We call it whitewater because it's white, and it's white because it's mixed with air. Okay? We obviously don't float in air. We barely float in water. I want to draw your attention to the 2 young men here in the front of the boat. And if you look between them, first of all, you'll notice that they're not wearing their life jackets. Here's their life jackets right there in between them. This picture was taken by professional photographers on the Deschutes River. Tragically, seconds after this was taken, this boat capsized. This young man right here lost his life. Same boat. It's come around the rock. This is the young man that I just pointed out, right here. You see that his life jacket is right behind him. But in these conditions, even if he reached it, there is no way that he could put it on. He's fighting to keep his head above water right now, and that's a battle that he lost. Compare that to this person right here, wearing their life jacket, and you'll see that they're floating head and shoulders out of the water. You're going to see that over and over in some pictures I have to show you. Quickly, we'll go over rapids classification because, again, this proposal only deals with class 3 and above rapids. So for those of you that may not be familiar with whitewater boating, the water is divided into 6 different classes. Class 1 is moving water, but that's about all you can say about it. Anybody can float through it. There are no hazards. Class 2, the rapids are straightforward. There may be some rocks or other obstacles, but people with little or no training can miss those. It's still not really a big deal. Go ahead. This is where whitewater begins, in class 3s. The rapids are moderate to irregular, and you can't necessarily avoid the rapids. You're going to go through them. In the others, you may have paths around them. Large waves and or strainers. A strainer is like a tree that's laying in the middle of the river, something that's hard to avoid. They may be apparent. And strong currents can make self-rescue difficult. This is truly where true whitewater begins. And this is also the point where guided boats must have everyone in the boat wearing a proper whitewater life jacket like you just saw. Class 4, this is just a class 3 on steroids. Bigger, faster, longer, tougher. Risk of injury if you're out of the boat is great in a class 4. Go ahead. 5, these are just plain stupid. Okay. These are for like professional people that want to push themselves to the limits. Risks are very high for injury or death. And class 6, Shears Falls, if you've ever been on the Deschutes River, is a class 6. It has the potential to be run, but the potential for injury or death is very high. Oregon has a lot of rivers in it with class 3 and above rapids. In fact, we have at least 16 plus numerous creeks and forks with class 3 and above rapids in them. And you can see the list of rivers there. And some of these receive very heavy rafting traffic and have businesses that depend on that rafting traffic. The Deschutes is one, the Rogue is one, and there are others. Go ahead. This is the lower 100 miles of the Deschutes River. And on that stretch, there are 12 rapids, 11 of which are commonly rafted, that are class 3 and above. Now, the Deschutes River runs between 4 and 5 miles per hour most of the time during the summer months when the rafting season is on. So it takes between 20 and 25 hours to cover that entire stretch, and that's usually done over a period of 3 to 4 days. These rapids are not real long, so boats are in them usually a minute or less. More for some, less for others. Not very long. So given that, in this entire lower 100 miles, by this proposal, we're asking boaters to actually wear their life jacket to be required a total of about 11 minutes, or about 1% of their total time on the water. We don't think that's unreasonable. For those of you that may not be familiar with whitewater rafting, I'd just like to show you how boats get in trouble. Because there are so many boats, you're going to hear a little bit later how many boats are actually out there. And it's so easy for them to get in trouble. I want to show you how it happens. This is Wapanesha Rapid. There have been lots and lots of accidents at Wapanesha Rapid, and we have had several deaths at Wapanesha Rapid. I want you to look at the faces of these people. They're all looking at one thing, and look at the concern. Go ahead. This is what they were looking at. This is the same rock that flipped the boat in the earlier slide where the young man died. Same exact rock. What happens is, this is the downstream side of the boat right here. When that side of the boat hits this rock broadside, the force of the water drives it up the rock, as you see, When that happens, when the upstream side, now underwater in this picture, hits the water, it's all over. Okay, as soon as that upstream side comes down, touches the water, that raft flips just that fast. The whole thing takes maybe a second, and it's gone. Go ahead. Same boat coming around the edge of the rock. Notice this person right here. Head and shoulders out of the water. Go ahead. Everyone's starting to pop up from under the boat. Go ahead. Okay. Almost everyone is accounted for here. Everyone survived this. Everyone was wearing their life jacket. But I show you this, again, to point out, notice these two people right here. They're not supported by the boat. They're in partially aerated water and wearing their life jackets, floating head and shoulders out of the water. Compare that to the young man trying to keep just his head out of the water that you saw earlier. This is the other way it happens. This is Oak Springs Rapid below Maupin on the Deschutes River. This is what we call a recirculating or keeper hole. The reason is, this is about a 6-foot wall of water. The elevation is about 6 feet higher here than it is down here. The force of this water coming down over this lip, it actually goes down underneath, drives under this froth, comes back up, and then runs upstream. This water that you see right here is actually moving from right to left. It's actually moving upstream. Okay? So a boat that's in there gets pushed over and over back into that wall of water as it's coming down. This one's already in trouble because no one's paddling. The way to get through one of these keeper holes is to paddle hard forward. Otherwise, it's going to drive you back into the wall. Go ahead. We got several pictures here. We'll just go through them fairly quickly and show you what happens. Fortunately, this one does have a happy ending, okay? But it has a few moments along the way. Go ahead. Here they're getting pushed back. You notice they haven't made any forward progress. Go ahead. See this little curl of water right back here? It tells you that that edge of the boat is now contacting the wall. Go ahead. Okay, they've spun out of it. Now the front end is contacting. Go ahead. Now we're getting good contact with the wall. And you back that up just a moment. Notice this side of the boat picking up. Okay, because the force of the water over here is driving this side down. Go ahead. Draw your attention to right over here. Keep your eye on this spot. You'll see something happening right in that area. Go ahead. There goes our first guy. Now, look at where he's at. This is right exactly where this wall of water is driving everything down. Okay? And at that point, life jacket or no, if you're not hanging on to something, that current will take you straight to the bottom of the river. And it will recirculate you. Just like this. Over and over, unless somehow you can manage to get out on the bottom. Okay? This rapid can kill you. Go ahead. You notice the, no pun intended, death grip on the boat right here. Okay, go ahead. Same thing, still hanging on. Go ahead. Finally, he's got his head back above water. Go ahead. And we're all smiles. We finally got our hands on the oars, and maybe things are going to be okay. Go ahead. But it's too little, too late. Okay, as the boat gets pushed this time, stern first, back, see the curl here already. Go ahead. Now you see it getting, look how far the boat is up against the wall of water. Go ahead. And this is what happens when a boat gets pushed into that wall of water. It pushes it up and can literally flip it right over. Go ahead. This time, it didn't go completely over backwards. It happened to spin out of it. Go ahead. But here goes our second guy right here. Okay, the first one, by the way, never did get back in the boat before it almost flipped there. So now we have two out of the boat. Go ahead. And that's where this series ends. Everybody ended up okay. But here's the point. Can you imagine being in that water, thrown out of that boat without a life jacket? Your chances of survival are not real great. Okay. And the other thing that I want you to take from this is, this happens, this is not an isolated incident. At Oak Springs Rapid on the Deschutes River in the summer, this happens over and over every day all season long. This is what goes on at this rapid. Okay? So the potential for death here is extremely high. If you fall out of a boat right there without wearing a life jacket, your odds are not real great. Okay? There are also all kinds of sharp rocks in the area just downstream from this that are very close to the surface. It probably accounts for more injuries than any other rapid that we have on the Deschutes. And there have also been deaths at this particular rapid. Go ahead. Let's talk about fatalities for a little bit. When I got these statistics from the Oregon State Marine Board, I found a couple of things that I recall from my experience that were not reflected in those. Again, I've been with Wasco County for some 21 years, and most of those as the SAR coordinator, so it was our team that recovered most of those bodies. And I found a couple that I didn't see mentioned in those statistics. That's no reflection on the Oregon State Marine Board. You're going to hear from here in a little bit. I believe that the statistics never reached them, so they obviously couldn't publish them. But if it could happen with our county, I'm sure it could happen with others. So this may be a little bit low. I couldn't tell you how much, probably not a lot, but it could be a little bit low. But in any case, just using these statistics, for this period of time, these are only the deaths out of boats in whitewater. This doesn't include fishermen. This doesn't include water that's not whitewater. These are just whitewater deaths from boats. And of the total, 26 or 72% were not wearing life jackets. And the average age was 44. Go ahead. Let's talk about cost for a little bit. The Danielle Hagler body recovery in 2006, the costs are estimated at over $50,000. Now, that's unusual. There was a lot that went on, and that cost was spread among several government agencies and several individuals who participated in the recovery effort. It's not unusual, however, to spend anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 to recover a body. That's completely usual. But the cost doesn't end there. We know we can't measure the emotional cost, but it's not only the families that are being affected. Search and rescue members that go out to recover these people, I've had to provide professional counseling for some of these people. We do that on an ongoing basis because what they see is not always pretty, and it's impossible for them to erase those pictures from their minds. Okay? They're not. We have enough trouble as professionals. When we ask volunteers to do that, it creates emotional problems that we have to deal with. And then there's the economic loss. You take communities like Maupin, for instance, but it's not certainly not the only one, whose economy is largely based on that river. Every time there's a publicized drowning, that economy takes a hit because people stop coming to the river. So there's an economic loss to the community. Current law in Oregon basically says this: for every boat on every piece of water, every time, there'll be a life jacket on board for every person. Right? A life jacket, type 1, 2, or 3, and the type 3 that you saw here is the most common. So that's the basic law that covers all boats. Go ahead. But guided boats on whitewater rivers, okay, we have a specific regulation for that, and it says that if you're on a guided boat, whether you're the guide or one of the passengers on board that boat, you must wear a properly fitting, proper whitewater jacket if you're in Class 3 and above rapids. I mean, we all believe that it only makes sense, but that's the current law as it is for guided boats on whitewater rivers. Okay, now go ahead. Interestingly enough, let's look at personal watercraft, the jet skis. There's an inherent risk of being in the water if you're riding a jet ski, even though that water is normally flat water, calm water, as opposed to the white water we've seen here. But still, it's likely you're going to end up in the water. So there's a law that says if you're on a jet ski, you must be wearing an inherently buoyant, not an inflatable type, life jacket all the time. Compare that to the white water you've just seen and think, you know what, there's a pretty good risk of being outside of the boat in white water too. It only makes sense that we should be doing something about that. Look at it this way. Okay? Under the current law, if you're in a guided boat, you have to wear your jacket. So if we make you absolutely as safe as we can, you're with a guide who has the right equipment, the right training, the right knowledge, then you have to wear your life jacket. But you're new to the river, you've never been down before, you don't have a clue what you're doing, and you're in your brand new $20 boat that was never ever meant to be on a river, then all you have to do is take this, was never meant for a whitewater, throw it in the bottom of your boat, and you're legal to go. Okay? Now, if that makes sense to you, please tell me what I'm missing, because it doesn't make sense to me. We've got the law backwards, and it needs to be changed. Under the new law, all it does is take what we already have for guides and say, we're going to apply that standard to everyone in a boat in a Class 3 and above rapid. Okay? You don't have to be with a guide. Everyone's going to wear their life jacket. Go ahead. Now, some people will say we should be spending our time with education and not enforcement. And that's half right. We do need to talk about education. And we've been talking about education for years. Everyone knows life jackets save lives. That's no secret. But people keep drowning without them. Okay? And that's why enforcement is needed. I'm a Marine officer 6 months out of the year. I'm a patrol officer the rest of the time. And I can't tell you how many times I pulled up to an intersection, like a four-way, and looked across the street and saw somebody do this. Okay, with their seatbelt. Now, they didn't just see me and realize that they'd be safer if they put on their seatbelt. They just put it on because they didn't want a ticket. Either way, they're safer now. Okay? The same applies to life jackets. That's the only way we're going to get some people to wear their life jackets is to make a law that says you need to put your life jacket on. Okay? The only negative comment that I've heard from anyone, and I've been working on this project for 3 years now, the only negative comment I've ever heard is that, well, people should be able to take chances they want to. It's their own lives. I'm a very strong advocate of personal freedoms. However, my freedoms stop where they touch you and you and you. Okay? I don't have the right to impact your lives. Well, that's what's happening here. By not wearing a life jacket, these people are creating problems economically. They're creating problems for volunteers, they're creating all sorts of issues, and we're only asking that they, wear a jacket 1% of the time? We ask people to wear a seatbelt. We ask people to wear a helmet when they ride a motorcycle, because the costs to society are just too great to ignore that. The person on the motorcycle, he's probably only going to kill himself. But you know what? If he ends up a paraplegic because he didn't wear his helmet, then you and I get to help pay for his care for the rest of his life. I object to that. Okay? When all he had to do was wear a helmet. Well, my tax dollars goes to get these people out of the river too. Okay? And all I'm asking is, wear a life jacket. This change is supported by the list of people that you see here, some of which you're going to hear from here today. Okay? We all think that it makes sense. It's a very small thing. And you have the chance here to help save some lives, literally, with no question. Go ahead. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to address those.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. What's the definition of a boat or a craft? I mean, would an inner tube qualify?
Chair Haas, Senator Cruz, the definition of a boat... A single inner tube does not apply. Okay. By definition, in Oregon, if you put, I say in Oregon because Coast Guard standards are, if it floats and carries you on the water, it's a boat. Okay. In Oregon, some vessels are excluded. Float tubes that fishermen use, a single inner tube, air mattresses, beach toys, those are not boats. And so they are excluded from the carriage requirements for any life jacket at all. Okay? If you tie two inner tubes together, the exclusion no longer applies. Ask me to explain that, but that is the law, okay?
Well, the reason I ask is, Ms. Chair, I grew up on North Umpqua, and we have a lot of tubes and air mattresses and everything under the sun, and we have a couple threes, and we don't have anything. But if you go on the upper north, and you can get a little more radical up there, where they used to hold the whitewater race, which I partook in for 10 years. But and by the way, I did wear a proper flotation device. So I'm just trying to kind of get a sense of how encompassing this was.
Mr. Chair, John Huffman, Senator Cruz. I don't know the status of it, but Senator Prezansky was heading down that road with another bill to address inner tubes and floats and things like that, because apparently there's been some problems in the Eugene area on the river. And so that was a separate bill, and we felt since one was with flat water and the other was rapids, we conversed about combining them but felt maybe it'd be confusing.
Thank you. Senator Farioli, would you like to congregate over here?
No, he left. He's not a congregation anymore.
I don't think you... No, you're not 25 people. You're okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Ted Farioli, I've come to conclusion that Deputy Pierce here is sort of an elemental force that's very difficult to ignore. And he's been absolutely the definition of what I want to see in a law enforcement officer. He's dedicated, caring, and he's sick and tired of hauling dead people out of rapids who should be protected by a personal flotation device and are not. And we've tried to make this the responsibility of the guide, and it puts an awful lot of pressure on the individual to make sure that people are protected. And as you saw from the photographs, they sit on those PFDs, personal flotation devices, rather than strapping them on. It needs to be a personal responsibility of the individual. And it's part of the process of getting folks to recognize that when they're going out to go through Class 3 and above rapids, they're putting themselves at risk. And strapping on that personal flotation device of the kind that will be effective is actually putting them in the proper mindset to be careful, to be mindful, and to be safe. The costs are all translated to the community, but it's incalculably expensive to see the toll on the families and the individuals and the law enforcement personnel and the EMTs and the search and rescue folks that have to do the recoveries week after week after week after year in the same stretches of the rivers. The Deschutes is probably one of the best examples, but there are so many others. I have railed against creating a nanny state. I've stood up on the floor and railed against it. But this truly is a matter of life and death, and I hope the committee takes the appropriate action. Questions?
Senator Bruce.
Yeah, Senator Farrell, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Farrelly, is this the closest you could come to navigability this session?
I regarded that as the political third rail. I will probably never go there again.
Senator Bonamici.
And thank you for that question, Senator Cruz, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward, President Huffman, and to all of you supporting it. I've only done some sort of hobby vacation rafting, and it's always been guided, and so I can't imagine being on one of these rafts without the personal flotation.
Oh, wow.
But I just wanted to ask you about the example that you put in the materials about the young man who did lose his life. That you referred to him as the one in the white shirt. This was a guided trip, was it not? I can't tell from the picture.
Senator Haas, Senator Bonamici, no. And unfortunately, probably 80%, perhaps my colleague here can address this closer than I, but a large number of the people that are rafting are not with guides. And as a matter of fact, in my 21 years on the Deschutes River with Wasco County, I do not recall a single incident of a fatality from a guided boat, okay? Which speaks to the care that the guides are taking of their people. It's non-guided boats, and that's where this legislation is aimed, and that was a non-guided boat.
Thank you.
There's one more. Are most of the guided boats platform boats, or is it a mixture?
I'm sorry, Senator.
Yeah, the rowing platform.
Oh. Actually, not. Most are paddle boats.
Okay.
By that I mean paddlers on both sides.
Well, you could have paddlers, but if you got somebody with the big oars, they totally control everything. So,
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy, your testimony is compelling. There may not be any other members in this assembly that have had the experience that I have had. I would not be here today without a personal flotation device. I made a very grave mistake. I was fly fishing in northern British Columbia, and so intent on fishing, I didn't realize where I was migrating, stepping downstream, which you step and cast, step and cast, and found myself in a predicament where I had no alternative but to go with the river. And had I not had a flotation device on, I would not be here today, pure and simple. And so my policy, I've grew up my entire life. I've been in whitewater boats. I have a lake boat. and very much enjoy. I've been through all those rapids. No one, even on flat water, gets in my boat without a life jacket. And I wear one. It may be 100 degrees outside, and when I'm fishing, and it may be totally flat water, but I wear a personal flotation device.
When you were on my boat, I wouldn't have to remind you.
You would not have to remind me. I would not be here today without a flotation device.
Thank you. Deputy, maybe can you walk me through what you think the mechanics of this would look like? You have someone in one of those $20 rafts coming down, for lack of a better word, numbskulls, and you're parked on offshore there somewhere, and then you sight them, and you know they're wearing shorts. I mean, how does this?
I'd be happy to. We would intend for the first year to be primarily educational. Officers would have discretion, as always, as to whether or not a site was appropriate. And during the educational phase, we would probably be fairly lenient. That's not to say that the right person that deserved the ticket didn't get the ticket. Okay, the object is voluntary compliance with the law, and sometimes it takes that ticket to get it. But in any case, when I'm working the upper Deschutes, the non-motorized section, I normally operate a motorized craft up there, a small Zodiac jet boat, which is smaller than many of the boats going by me. But I'm extremely mobile, and I can contact any boat on the water. So should I, well, I already do. When I find people without their life jackets on, we go to shore and we talk about it at the very least right now. Right now my options are limited as to what I can do. I can do an educational process. Okay, if they have a Type 3, the worthless jacket here, laying in the bottom of their boat, there's nothing I can do than say, for God's sakes, at least please put this one on. Okay, that's currently. But the mechanics of it are that it would be discretional to the officer whether or not to issue a cite for that particular violation. And again, it could be the operator of the boat. If there's a single person in control of the vessel, that person could be cited for multiple people, only one cite, okay? Or each individual could be cited. Again, that would be the option of the officer. If we're talking about a boat that one person is primarily in charge, then I would cite that person if a cite was indeed necessary. If it's a paddle craft where I've got eight people and they're all just part of the party and four of them aren't wearing jackets, if citations are necessary, there's going to be four citations.
Okay. Further questions? Senator Metzger.
Well, I just want to add my voice to the fact that I really appreciate you bringing this forward. And it certainly does make a lot of sense. And it is difficult all the time, I think, to say why you need to legislate things, you know, legislate intelligence. But sometimes we have to do that if just as you mentioned the seatbelt occasion, the reminder may save their life because it was a law, they think about it. And I think it is really important. I do remember in the early 90s, when I was fishing with a friend of mine, Steve Kohler, has now passed away, in my former life, and we pulled a body out of the Lower Deschutes River that had been missed for 4 or 5 days, and it's not a fun thing to do. And it's not just the rafting. And I know these are rivers and rapids that are designated as different classes, but the reality is that those that aren't classed that way can become that way. And the North Fork Nehalem is one of those. Has three rapids that are normally class two. They call them Jack Queen Keen. And if you ever fish the North Fork Nehalem, you'll know those. And in the winter, it is class three rapids and plus. It can be very, very hazardous. And a very good friend of mine, Senator Fergoners, are well aware of this person, lost his life last year, a veteran guide. He was out by himself and hit a rock in the high water, Jim Erickson. And boat flipped and did not have his a personal flotation device, and exactly what happened, and we lost Jim. It was very sad going to that funeral on the North Coast with all these people. He's been in this building many times advocating for fishing issues and everything, and he was smart enough to know better. But the fact of the matter is, on that day, those were Class C rapids, and so I think just passing this law, just helping, I think, and I would really emphasize the awareness part. You know, there are certain requirements here, but it's also sending a message that river conditions change, and you should always be prepared, because no matter how experienced you are, even 25 years of experience doing very, very difficult things, in an instant you can lose your life. And I think that educational part is going to be a very important part of this.
Thank you, Senator. This would be a good time for me to add as to the mechanics of this. Rivers can change, as you just mentioned, and so the applicability of this law will depend on the then current conditions, whether a 2 goes to a 3 or a 3 goes to a 2, which can happen, both with increased and decreased water flows. It will depend on the conditions then present.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Curry,
if you choose as a committee to pass this bill out, I can make you two promises. First, you're going to take a beating for it, because this will be looked at by some people as interference, and they'll be vocal about it. And the second thing I can promise you is you will not know the number of lives you save, because it's incidents avoided that you won't read about, that you won't hear about. I'd liken it to the time when the legislature got together and mandated 10-year non-removable batteries and smoke detectors in rentals. You know, a lot of people beat us up over that. But we did it. It was, I think, one of the first states in the union to have a 10-year battery that doesn't fit anything else, so there's no point in removing it. And we know we're saving lives. We just don't know how many, because it's the people that didn't die in a fire that don't get reported. And it'll be the folks that don't drown in the rapids that you'll be aiming this legislation at. So you won't know. You'll take a beating, and you won't know. So I urge you to do this.
Hey, we do that every day.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well,
if we had Senator Ferraioli carry the bill, then he could take the beating.
Yeah, I was hoping that one of the members of the committee would want to carry this.
Well, thank you,
thank you
all. Thank you, Senator. And thank you, Representative Huffman. You're doing a great job in guiding this bill through. This was the first wave of House bills that this committee's seen, and this is the first one on the first day. So, puns intended.
Yeah, I
we have other people signed up to testify here. Mark Angel. Taylor Garrett.
Absolutely.
Lynette Ripley.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Mark Angel, and I live in Redmond, Oregon. I do river salvage and rescue under the name of Whitewater Salvage.
Excuse me, I think you need to sit down. Mark, the microphone is... I'm sorry. Why don't you separate the mics? Feedbacks are probably right about there. Should I start over? If you separate the microphones...
There we go.
How about that? We want to be able to hear you.
Just a tip.
Okay.
There we go.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Mark Angel, and I live in Redmond, Oregon. I do river salvage and rescue under the name of Whitewater Salvage. I'm the only private concern that is authorized for search and rescue by the federal government. I have a document from them that allows me to go on rivers at any time with any boat, regardless of boating restrictions, if I deem it necessary. I grew up in Butte County of Northern California. I started diving rivers and whitewater in 1950 at the age of 7. By the time I moved to Oregon in 1971, I was a journeyman whitewater diver with over 20 years under my belt. Yet I don't believe I had ever heard the term whitewater. When I got to Oregon, I did what I thought was the most normal, natural thing for anybody to do. I put on my dive gear and started diving Oregon's worst rapids. I missed a page, sorry. In the blink of an eye, my life changed forever. Mr. Nobody was elevated to the rank of superstar in the blink of an eye. In an industry that up until that point, I didn't even know existed. I soon learned that no one else had ever dove whitewater, which is still true today. Till then, I had never thought about boating whitewater. in the 21 years of diving those nasty whitewater rivers in California, I had never seen a boat, nor had I ever heard of one on them. All of a sudden, everyone involved in whitewater wanted to be my best friend. 38 years ago, the legends of whitewater taught me the correct and safe way to run river. I didn't have to learn the hard way like most people do. In the 38 years since then, I have salvaged nearly 200 boats from the bottom of these whitewater rapids with a 100% success rate. I think it's safe to say that no one else has ever heard as many firsthand accounts of almost drowning as I have. Somewhere between 400 and 600 people occupied those boats. And since I don't wear a badge, I got to hear exactly what really did happen. The common denominator always was a life jacket. The mandate in the bill before you is exactly what the legends taught me 38 years ago as to be the only common sense safe way to boat river, and is exactly what I've been teaching others since then. Of those I've interrogated, the ones wearing a whitewater life jacket never considered the incident a life-threatening threat. Of the ones that wore a lesser jacket and the ones that didn't wear a life jacket, boy howdy, I'm telling you, they will never make that mistake again. Even for me, searching for whitewater victims is extremely difficult and time-consuming. The expenses and time I spend searching each year, I consider my donation to life. The number of days I spend searching for victims each year has been as high as 31. Please pass this bill into law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Angel. You certainly have a unique perspective on this. Senator Morris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Angel, for coming. Legend has it that you ran Shearer's Falls in a hard drift boat. Is that legend correct?
That is correct, sir.
That must have been a ride.
And a raft. Those are the only two runs of Shearer's that were successful.
But if he does it again, he'll talk to me.
Well, the point is, there's some good points to be taken from this, though. Normally when somebody does that, it's a spur-of-the-moment barroom bet, something like that.
Not a good point.
It wasn't for me. I looked at it, and I thought, that'd be kind of fun. I lived right there in Maupin. Once I decided to do it, I studied the rapids for 5 years looking for the correct water flow. I prepared my boat. I prepared myself. I wore a 3/8 wetsuit. I had throw lines on the side ready to rescue me if I got in trouble. Now, I'm the only whitewater diver in the world. And I've run Class 6 rapids. I've dove Class 6 rapids. I've run almost every rapids, in the Pacific Northwest. I've salvaged bodies off of most of them. And to be very honest, I can't swim. I could not swim from you to me to save my life. True story. Life jackets save lives. I would not run a boat without a life jacket on. I would like to tell you one more tiny little story. Really fits. This happened to a federal fisheries agent. In a meeting, somebody said, "You guys wear your life jackets on the Deschutes River." And he got up and said, "We always wear our life jackets. We wouldn't think of being in that river without our life jackets. It's just the way it is. Nobody would be that stupid." The very next day, that's him that drowned. So you do need to pass a law. That guy knew the day before he made that statement, and he drowned. Roger showed you his picture. If it would have been something he could have got arrested for, he'd have been wearing one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Angel. I think we're all a little bit stunned silence of you running cheer as well. I'm on purpose. Go ahead. Start off with your name.
I'm Taylor Garretts, chair of this committee. I'm a river guide on the Deschutes, fly fishing. I've been doing that since 1995, and I've been helping Mark since right about then. And I've been with him on probably 40 different boat salvages and half a dozen body recoveries. And the bottom line is we've had to do this since the beginning of time, since I started guiding. We've had to wear, myself and my clients have had to wear the life jackets in class 3 and higher water, and we do it without even thinking. It's just not even an afterthought. You know, we get to the rapid, we put on the life jacket, go through the rapid, take the jacket off. It's not even an issue. The problem that I see is the people that don't know the risk that they're going into, and they're either too arrogant or not smart enough to realize they need to put on the life jacket until after the fact. And it's just so simple to do that unless, and I'm not for law enforcement or anything, but it's so simple to do that if we can get together and get people to realize that they need to be wearing it, it's just a common sense thing. And if you give people a chance for common sense, they usually don't have the common sense to use it. So if it would save someone's life, it's going to save one life. It's a lot worth passing.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Thank you for coming over and testifying. Lynette, do you want to make a presentation? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Lynette Ripley, and I'm the Lower Deschutes River Manager and also the John Day River Manager in Central Oregon. I work for the Bureau of Land Management, and I've been working on rivers for 21 years for the federal government, and I've been the River Manager on the Lower Deschutes for 10 years. I'm here today because I'm in full support for the proposed mandatory life jacket bill. BLM, as you know, manages many of our whitewater rivers here in Oregon. We've got, I think, the prettiest rivers in the country. And those are, some of those are the Umpqua, the Lower Deschutes, the Rogue, the Grand Ronde, the Owyhee, the Klamath. And our number one goal for BLM is visitor safety. I'm responsible for placing river rangers out on these remote rivers, in the Lower Deschutes and the John Day River, and we are pretty much the first contact for these boaters getting on the river. We're the ones educating them and informing them right before the river trip, especially about water safety. The biggest question we get, not the biggest, but we get this a lot, is am I required to wear a life jacket on this river? And our response has to be, if you're an adult, no. But we strongly suggest it. That, to us, is a very difficult response to try to explain to people as they're going into Class 3 and 4 whitewater, especially on the Lower Deschutes River. As you've seen in the photos here, we have a 13-mile day stretch that we call the Splash and Giggle. 13 miles they can do in about 4 hours. And in that stretch, we have Class 3 and 4 rapids, and they are not required to wear their life jacket after they've been drinking alcohol. And many of them are first-time boaters on the river, and also some of them are very inexperienced, these private boaters. So you put that combination together, and you have a high risk of drownings that's waiting to happen. And any of you that know anything about the Lower Deschutes, we are the largest wild and scenic river system in the BLM in the country. We have 250,000 visitors a year. Half of those are boaters, about 150,000 boaters. And on that 13-mile stretch, we can put any up to 3,000 boaters a day on that stretch going through those rapids that you saw. And that's a very high risk once they've been drinking, and many of them are very inexperienced and they don't have a guide. Our BLM staff actually assist Officer Pierce and Mark Angel at times to do body recovery. That's not what we signed up for, because our rangers are first on the scene, and a lot of times they just need help for traffic control and body recovery dealing with the families. The economic impact and the emotional impact is very high in our operations. The economic impact means that I have to take, if I have 8 rangers for my whole 100 miles of river and help out Mark Angel with body recovery and traffic control, then all my rangers go to one situation and the rest of the 100 miles of the river is unattended. This is taxpayer money at work. And usually it can go into days of effort here when someone's just made a bad choice not to wear their life jacket. So the economic impact is measurable, but the emotional impact is priceless. You can't put a price on a life lost unnecessarily. And this is the real tragedy. Until you experience the devastation of spending days with the family and parents of a drowning victim while they search for his body, you will not grasp the emotional impact and trauma of all involved. And it was in August of 2005, 25-year-old Dustin removed his life jacket minutes before he was entering Wapanesha Rapids, Class 3, on the Deschutes River. And the reason was he thought he could jump in and get his water bottle that he dropped and swim quicker without his life jacket, jump back in the boat, and then get through the rapids. This blonde-haired, blue-eyed American boy lost his life over a water bottle, but he would still be here if he had left his life jacket on. I spent the next several days with his family and friends and his fiance, who was on the boat with him, as they were out there recovering his body. This devastation will last them a lifetime, and they come back to the river every year to that spot at Wapanesha to remember him. From my perspective, this proposed mandatory life jacket bill will be the single most important factor in saving visitors' lives on Oregon's whitewater rivers. It makes sense, it's necessary, and really it's a matter of life and death. So let's make it a law. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you very much. And Henry Rendy from the Marine Board?
Yes, Randy Henry.
So sorry.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Randy Henry with the Oregon State Marine Board. I'm the policy analyst for the board, speaking today for Paul Don Hefner, our director. Wearing a life jacket on any waterway is something the Oregon State Marine Board always recommends. We do have extensive educational campaigns, and we work closely with our officers to try to get that point across in numerous ways. Class 3 whitewater poses special risks, and so wearing a PFD or life jacket on this type of water is really a must. During the past 10 years, there were 42 boating fatalities on all of Oregon's rivers. Of these, 12 occurred in Class 3 rapids, Class 3 or higher rapids. In 6 of the 12 fatalities, the victim was correctly wearing a life jacket. In a 7th accident, the jacket was worn but incorrectly. So in slightly more than half of the deaths that took place in Class 3 or higher rapids, a life jacket was worn or present on the victim. Now, as I'm reading this, as this was prepared by the director, I'm struck by, on the surface, by thinking, okay, that means you're 50-50 chance of survival if you're wearing your life jacket. But I know that that's not true. Just the common sense would say otherwise, and I start thinking about the percentage of people who wear life jackets when they're going through a Class 3 rapids. I've certainly been on the Deschutes and the Salmon and some other rivers where I've either watched or I've participated, and I would have guessed 80 to 90% of the people when they're going through a rapids are wearing their life jacket. In talking to the deputy here, he estimates 90, 95 or more percent. So I started doing the math, and I'm not the best mathematician, but if you look at the deaths per 1,000 people operating on a river, if 90% are wearing their life jackets, yet half of the people who die are not wearing their life jackets, if my calculations are roughly correct, that comes out to about a tenfold advantage in wearing your life jacket. You'd be 10 times more likely to survive a spill on a Class 3 rapids if you were wearing your life jacket. It's kind of a rough calculation, but I think it's in the ballpark, and it's probably fairly realistic. We do believe that most people recognize the inherent danger and risk associated with running whitewater rivers, especially those with Class 3 rapids. Overall, 12% of the river deaths were associated with a person not wearing a PFD in Class 3 or higher rapids. House Bill 2079 would provide a consistent law for the public that life jackets must be worn in Class 3 rapids, whether the trip is commercial or private. Again, though, the fact is that any water, moving or not, is hazardous. I think the simple truth is most of our boating fatalities occur in relatively calm water on nice days, because in those situations, most people aren't wearing their life jackets. Universal mandatory life jacket wear is one of the few safety interventions remaining that hasn't been adopted to reduce boating deaths. Adopting House Bill 2079 would be another small step forward by mandating PFD wear in Class 3 whitewater. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. You'll, if this were to pass, set up rules?
Certainly.
Currently, is a Class A misdemeanor for other life vest violations?
I believe that. Class B.
Class B. And would this, do you know whether this would be classed, what it would be classed as? Violation?
We'd work with the law enforcement.
I'm quite certain it would remain a B, as with other life jacket violations.
Okay. Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 2079? Then I will close public hearing on House Bill 2079, and I'll open up a public hearing. I will open a work session on House Bill 2079.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2079 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 2079 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none. Is there objection? Seeing none. So ordered. House Bill 2079 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and in spite of his objection, I will assign Senator Farioli the privilege of carrying this bill. Thank you all for coming over. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 2079, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2111.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2111 abolishes the Public Charter School Development Fund. Specifies that any monies in the fund will be transferred to the Department of Education account that's to be used by public charter schools. Declares an emergency and would take effect July 1, 2009. There's no fiscal or revenue impact.
Okay.
It's a very short bill. Let's see how quick Morgan can be on this.
Morgan Allen from the Department of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. House Bill 2111 is another one of my now infamous Department of Education technical cleanup bills. It just removes an outdated provision of statute related to what used to be called the Charter School Development Fund. So just to give the committee a little bit of background, there in ORS 338175, there's actually something called the Charter School Development Fund, and that was originally created at the beginning of charters. They used to get loans from the federal government that were funded by grants. Now, as you know, they get planning grants. They're just allocations, and the schools get these. And because the federal law has changed, and actually the federal law no longer allows the types of loans that used to be processed through this fund. And according to our staff, there were only a few of these that were ever types of transactions that were ever made in Oregon, and they've all been repaid. So this fund is no longer relevant. During an internal ODE audit of the state school fund in 2006, it was recommended that that we need to get some clarification around the statute. We consulted with the Attorney General and Treasurer's Office, who also concurred with our opinion that there is no need for this statute. So just to make it very clear, because it does, if you just look at like the summary and a couple lines in there, it sounds like it might be doing actually a lot. But really it doesn't do anything by deleting it. We're on a 3-year charter grant, which I believe is about $16.5 million, that runs through 2011. This bill will not impact that funding in any way, or how we distribute that money, or which charter schools can apply for that money. Just to sum it up, we have all the statutory authority we need, even with the elimination of this piece of statute, to continue making sure those grants get out to charter schools. The bill passed out of the House Education Committee unanimously and passed off the House floor unanimously, and we would hope that you could pass it on to the floor with a due pass. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Morgan Allen. Senator Cruz.
Mr. Morgan, I think I'm seeing a pattern here. Cindy Hunt was in this building drafting all of the education statutes for years. Then you hired her over into your shop, and now she's going to spend the next decade correcting all the mistakes she made when she was over here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I think they were not mistakes. They were just collective oversights by the legislature. She drafted at your direction, sir. You cannot blame her.
Mr. Chair, I have an observation as well. I was surprised that there was no revenue impact here. I know we've seen a number of bills in the legislature this session. We've seen them in the past, but especially on those in the Rules Committee with any time we add a sentence or two or want to add a sentence or two to the voters' pamphlet, they always tell us it's going to cost more money to add another line or two because of the paper. And if we're going to repeal irrelevance, you would think that would make ORS smaller and there would be some fiscal savings here from less lines have to be printed. But anyway, that's just my observation. I want to repeal irrelevance. I think that's a good thing to do.
Well, when we get an in-state vendor for that, that might make a difference. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Morgan, I assume there's no money in this fund.
That's correct, actually. Thank you, Senator Bonamici. That's a good point. There is no money currently in the fund, although the bill says any funds in the fund would be transferred
right.
over. But there is
it's
no money
sitting
currently.
Okay.
Yeah.
It has been swept. And we have no amendments on this bill. Okay. If there's no further questions and no one else who wants to testify on this bill, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2111, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2111.
And Mr. Chair, to continue the role that we are on, giving relief from mandates, giving relief to cities for unnecessary functions and anachronistic parts of government, I would move House Bill 2111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves House Bill 2111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. House Bill 2111 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Metzger, your name is up.
I'm the irrelevance repealer.
Freedom from the fund.
We'll close the work session on House Bill 2111. And we will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2109.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2109 comes to us again from the Department of Education, and it changes statutory references to professional technical education and professional technical training to the terms that are more in vogue at this time, career and technical education and career and technical training. There is no revenue or fiscal impact.
Staff's getting a little snappy here.
Yes. Did you just ad-lib that or what?
Mr. Chair, I think after Monday, she was able to actually catch up on some of her sleep, and she's back in the land of the living now. So.
Yes, I think so. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education, and this is another one of our bills. But the other kind I'm sort of getting famous for, which is to bring our state statutory language in line with current federal statute. And House Bill 2109 is another technical bill, and it brings terminology that Ms. Richardson described into line with the Federal Perkins Act. As you probably know, the Carl D. Perkins Vocational and Technical Education Act was authorized by Congress in 1984, and that's frankly how we get a big chunk, if not almost all of our money in Oregon for technical and vocational education for both the department and our schools. The law was revised in 2006, and the revision goes through 2013. What House Bill 2109 does, it makes those exact changes that that Ms. Richardson described. The current terms in statute are professional technical education and professional technical training, and the 2006 revision of that act changed them to career and technical education and career and technical training, respectively. So we've worked with the professional organizations for career and technical education, and they've mostly made these changes in their terminology, and I know the community colleges, I believe, are working on this language for their changes as well. So again, House Bill 2109 just makes sure that our statute is caught up and in compliance with federal law.
Thank you. Questions?
Okay.
Seeing none, there is no one else wishing to testify on this, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2111 and open up a work session on House Bill 2111.
I'm sorry,
2109. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2109.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2109 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves House Bill 2109 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. House Bill 2109 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We are over to you, Senator Bonamici. Would you mind carrying this bill?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And
once we got out of the deep water, we've been moving faster.
I'll close a work session on House Bill 2109 and open up a work session on House Bill 2062. Dana,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2062 is before us earlier this month, and it is one of the measures that the joint committees or the House and Education committees worked on in the interim to identify and protect children from sexual abuse in schools. Representative Gelser is here to testify. Senator Walker testified as well. There have been no changes to the measure since that discussion. There is a fiscal impact statement, and there is no revenue impact. And is that enough information, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, I think so. Most of you know that this was work that actually began more than a year ago in some work groups that Senator Cruz was working on with Senator Walker. And this is, as Ms. Richardson mentioned, this is one of about five teacher sex abuse prohibition bills that we have. There were some.
I would prefer to call them child safety bills, but
child safety
rather than teacher
sex
abuse.
In the statute, I think you're right.
Okay.
And we did have some comments and some suggested changes at the last public hearing that we had here, and we looked into drafting some amendments to address some of those changes, one from the substitutes, one from Senator Walker herself, and I think the consensus was we just weren't able to get there with any kind of an amendment that would not do damage to other parts of this bill. So any comments on this?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonamici?
I recall some of those conversations, and I think I'll just put on the record that on page 2 of the bill where it talks about substantiated report, I think that was designed to, when we had the discussion about it, I think that addressed some of the concerns that the substitute teachers were raising. And I know that they have gone back and looked at some of the district policies on making false reports, and that was a concern. I think we all know that there's a possibility of false reports, but, you know, overall in the balance, it's important to protect the safety of students, and I believe that the current language of the bill does address their concerns after looking into it further, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Other comments?
The bill should pass.
All right. Senator Morse?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2062A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 2062A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. House Bill 2062A engrossed goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I did talk to Senator Walker today, and if it pleases committee, asked her to carry this bill. So she will.
As long as it passes.
Any other business before the committee? If not, we are adjourned.